This is the Happy Rant Sports Podcast, in which Ted Cluck and Barnabas Piper rant about old sports, new sports, sports books, sports movies, and anything else related to sports that they feel like. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined, as always, in studio by my good friend and my partner in sports radio, Barnabas Piper. Pipe, we've got a fun one teed up today. This all developed because of a text that I sent you the other night. Dude, my cat just jumped up. Do you hear her? She jumped right next to my microphone. She's she's right here on the desk. It's Jane Cluck.
My apologies to listeners for the declining quality of this show. We put so much effort into the production.
Oh, I know it. I know it. But Pipe, the other night, I was watching an Atlanta Hawks game, and I texted you, and I'm like, Danilo Gallinari is still in the league? ? And you hit me back, and you were like, his corpse is. And the corpse joke is a funny one. Like, it never gets old. It's, of course, referring to, like, guys who have been around a long time. They've been around so long that you've forgotten them, but at one point they had a name. Right. Or they were somebody that you cared about or somebody that was on your radar. And, you know, Gallinari is not a bad player. Like, he's still playing a lot of minutes. But he's just one of those guys that, like, I'd forgotten about, lost track of.
And I feel like there's a couple key elements to the corpse thing. It's not just an old guy, because, like, Chris Paul is one of the oldest guys in the league, but he still plays at an all-star level. So, like, the corpse of Chris Paul is not in the league. Just all-star Chris Paul is. And it's not just like an old dude. It's like a guy you remember being good, and then you watch him and you're like, wait, he can't run, jump, or shoot anymore. Like, he's just a shell of himself.
Absolutely. So, yeah, the corpse, like, moniker, it's going to need some fleshing out. And as we go through our rosters here, so we're doing an all corpse team. This is NBA. It's all NBA content this week. I'm back on board with the NBA. Like, I've just taken a deep dive into it the last couple of weeks, and I'm really enjoying it this season. And so, yeah, kind of getting reacquainted with rosters, watching teams. It was a challenge, Pipe, to put together an all corpse team, right? Of these guys that, like you said, they can't just be old and playing at a high level. They have to have kind of played at a high level before, or had a lot of hype before, and now they're kind of at the end of it. And this was a blast. This was really fun to do. So let's get into this, Pipe. Do you want to go, like, back and forth, or do we just each talk through our entire roster and
let's go back and forth, because then if there's one that we agree or disagree on, we can
flesh it out.
Yeah,
absolutely. Why don't you go first, Pipe? First
corpse.
Right.
My number one pick in the for my all corpse team is Rajon Rondo. Dude, also solid. On the Atlanta Hawks.
I had Rondo as well. I've got another point guard though, and we can get into it. But talk me through Rondo, because I like that one.
So Rondo every year for the last 3 or 4 years has been, well, first of all, Rondo was always a weird player because he was all athlete, good defense, great passer, could never shoot.
Yeah.
Not a player that ages well.
Yeah.
They rely on speed and quickness. Somehow he's like on year 13 or 14 in the league. He was on the Lakers last year when they won the title. He gets signed by the Hawks to sort of be this veteran stabilizer, which is also funny because he's just insane.
And
somehow he's still like duping GMs into giving him significant guaranteed money to be a net drag on the team, and he's gotten worse at the things he used to be good at, and he still can't do the things he was bad at before.
Yeah, it's fascinating with a guy like Rondo where you wonder what the like replacement value on him would be, and I've got to think you could just get another point guard for, you know, relatively speaking, pennies on the dollar and get Rondo-esque production at this point. Yet he's one of these guys that, I mean, we do this with real people too, in addition to athletes, but we assume a level of maturity just because they're old. And just because Rondo is old, it doesn't mean he's an amazing clubhouse guy. And like, I mean, Brian McLaren's old. It doesn't mean I would want him like speaking wisdom into anyone's life who I cared about. So, I mean, there's not necessarily like a, maturity and age straight line that you can draw with these guys.
Yeah, and I mean, there is merit in the aging point guard thing. Like, Andre Miller played until he was 54 or something like that. And yeah. He brought a sort of a stabilizing presence to teams, and there's a benefit in that. But Rondo's not a stable person.
No.
he's the kind of guy who's going to punch Trae Young or something, you know, or like choke the coach or walk Absolutely. Off the court or something. So he is a shell of himself. And you think about how he dominated in the playoffs when he was with those Celtics teams in the mid-aughts. I mean, he was a really, really good, unique player. And he's not good or unique anymore.
Yeah, he's going to be a fascinating guy in our clubhouse on this hypothetical all-corps NBA team. So my starting point guard here, Pipe, and I want to know if you've got him, Derrick Rose.
No, I don't, because I would quibble with this a little bit, because I would say Derrick Rose is like resurrected, not corpse. He or reinvented, if you will.
Sure.
You know how Vince Carter went from half man, half amazing to like the best sub and veteran guy?
Yeah.
And so at the end he was a corpse, but also he was like a lovable corpse. So
dude, he was lovable. He did what he did really well. Yeah,
his teammates loved him. Everybody in the league loved him. He was, you know, he'd throw down 2 360 dunks a season just to show that at 40 he still could. So absolutely. I feel like Rose is more on that track, where he went from one of the most explosive athletes in the league to multiple knee surgeries, went to New York. That didn't go well. Ended up in Minnesota, where, you know, had a 50-point game, was kind of a sixth man, fell into that role, and then, you know, became a guy who's like, okay, he can get hot off the bench. He can manage the team. He is a beloved teammate. The spotlight's not on him. So, I mean, I think he's got another three years in him as a kind of a sixth man, scoring point guard, solid teammate.
Yes, absolutely.
And never
mentor, young guy, kind of
never rocks the boat. Yeah, and if there's a young star that comes in, he can throw his arm around him and be like, look, I know what it's like to have the spotlight on you. Granted, Detroit never gets those guys, so until he's on a different team, that's irrelevant. But I would quibble with the corpse thing a little bit, just because he has reinvented himself.
No, totally.
Instead of just getting bad.
Yeah, there's going to be some controversy here with these corpse rosters, because I've got a couple on here that I even quibble with myself on it. But that's why we're doing this. This is a good exercise. All right, give me another one from your roster, Pipe.
Let's see. Okay, this is one you might quibble with. But I'm gonna take a swing on it. A fellow backcourt mate with Rondo would be John Wall.
I'm not quibbling. Because I was conflicted about John Wall. I wanted to put him on the roster. I ultimately didn't, because I couldn't quite talk myself into him being a corpse yet. But he's got a – yeah, I mean, he's saddling a team with a terrible contract. He's had the injuries. I mean, it's a – he's on that corpse trajectory for sure.
Yeah, so – and here's the thing about Wall. So I want to leave the contract out of it, because that – that falsely exaggerates his decline as a player. Because, yes, he's not worth that money, but neither is anybody outside of, like, LeBron James and, you know, three other players, Kevin Durant or something. So the corpse thing is because, you know, so he blew out his Achilles a couple years ago, missed 2 years, got traded for Westbrook. He's putting up some numbers this year, but he, unless he figures out how to do the Derrick Rose thing... First of all, he was never as good as Derrick Rose was at his peak. Wall was good, but not that good. Unless he figures out how to do that, he is going to go the Allen Iverson route, where he's just like he loses half a step and he's useless.
Yeah,
so
completely.
He might be pre-corpse, but he's on his way to the mortuary.
He's on his way to the mortuary. He's in the vehicle, they're trying to revive him, and it could go either way. Yeah, I was conflicted about John Wall, but I'll tell you what, while we're in this space, this kind of are they or aren't they kind of space, I've got another one for you. This one hurts me because I love this guy. And we've talked, I think, on this program about how, like, 2,000 years ago, this guy would have been the king of the world. It's Gordon Hayward. And here's my rationale, Pipe. He's scoring kind of at an amazing clip this season. Like, he's really scoring well. But it still somehow feels like he's done being relevant. You know, he's had the big injuries. He's kind of gone from being, this guy's a centerpiece kind of guy to being not on that trajectory anymore. Where are you at with Gordon Hayward as a corpse?
So I think he's way pre-corpse, but he's not way pre-irrelevant.
Okay. I
think he's on the brink of irrelevance. So, you know, rose to semi-stardom in Utah, but I think was always overrated because he was a white dude in Utah.
An astonishingly good-looking white dude who you couldn't help but like him.
When you have a nice hairline and you're white and you're in Utah and you play basketball, you're going to be overrated. Hey, Jennifer Absolutely. Burnett. So then he goes to Boston, and two things happen. One, I think we realized I don't even know if we had a chance to realize how good he was or wasn't, because in game one, he turned his ankle 180 degrees the wrong direction, which was just horrendous. And then they drafted two really good young wings, or maybe they were already there. I can't remember. But Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum took over, and they're both better than he is. And they play better together. And so he became a third wheel at overpriced. Now they let him go for nothing. So he goes to Charlotte, and I think where he's at right now is he's going to be like do you remember Sharif Abdul-Rahim?
Oh, absolutely.
So I think Gordon Hayward might be the next sort of Sharif Abdul-Rahim, where he's like, he gets buckets on a team that never achieves relevance. And then as he ages, he could be a veteran contributor to, like, late career him could be current Joe Ingles, you know, 20-minute wing, good distributor, good shooter.
Absolutely.
But just kind of a glue guy. And I think he could make the transition to glue guy. So I don't think he's a corpse. I do think he's irrelevant.
That makes a ton of sense. And I really love the, like, late career Joe Ingles comp for him. But it would take, like, and I think this is part of the calculus with corpses. It takes a complete paradigm shift in how you think about yourself and how people in the fan base think about you as well. You know, I think he's in a good place to try it out. Like, I think the Charlotte fan base is going to love him. You know, I think he could experiment with some of what we're talking about out there. And I could see it, but, you know, hard to talk about Gordon and the word corpse in the same sentence, but we're radio pros, so I got to do it. Give me another one, Pipe, another NBA corpse for you.
All right, I'm going to go with, like, the undead here. So this is not just corpse. This is like, I thought he was dead four times. This is like a horror
movie. I think I know
where
you're going with this, and I like it.
Okay, well, I'm going with Taj Gibson.
Oh, okay. I like it.
As long as we're on the category, let's throw in Udonis Haslem as well.
There you go. There were a lot of bigs that fit this corpse kind of paradigm.
So the love affair between Tom Thibodeau and Taj Gibson continues in New York this year, despite New York being a team entirely made up of power forwards. They signed him at the beginning of the season. And, you know, I watched Gibson play for Tibbs in Minnesota, and, like, Gibson used to be a good defense, good rebounding, good glue guy.
Yeah.
Then he became a mediocre defense, mediocre rebounding, good glue guy. And now he's just a glue guy, but I think only in the sense of, like, in practice. So I think Gibson is the one, like, when you see him go on the court, you're like, wait, what?
he's like a bullpen catcher that everybody loves. You know,
one of the things for me for all these corpse guys is having a lasting memory of them at their peak. And Taj Gibson had he dunked Dwayne Wade into oblivion.
Yeah.
In the playoffs, you know, so when it was he and Derrick Rose on those Bulls teams that went to the conference finals, and, like, he destroyed Dwayne Wade one game. And that's who he could be at various points. Like, he was a, put, you know, him next to Joakim Noah, like, they were long, they were scrappy, they were fierce.
For sure.
And so he's definitely a corpse guy.
I love it, man. Those are great corpse guys. Because we're on Biggs, I want to lay one on you. I think this guy, to me, kind of epitomizes what it means to be a corpse. In that he had the big name, so much hype. He had a good scandal or two. Now he's just like a throwing guy in trades, and he's been on a bazillion teams. Dwight Howard.
Yeah, he was on my list as well, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. For all the reasons I just mentioned, I think there was some low hanging like corpse fruit out there. He was one of the first guys that I drafted. He was a corpse lottery pick. Who you got next, Pipe?
So the next one really grieves me because as of 2 years ago, he was one of the most productive players at his position in the NBA. I don't know if he was one of the best, but he played on a bad team, so it was hard to tell. It was one of those, like, if he got in a better situation, would he be a better player? And then he got injured in two consecutive years, and it's Boogie Cousins.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, sure. Boogie's a great corpse. I hate
Boogie's an untimely corpse. Like, he and John Wall are both on the Rockets right now. Both untimely corpses due to injury. But like, Boogie's never going to be back. He will never be the 24-11 guy. He'll never be the super kind of freakishly skilled big man. He'll probably stay skilled, but like, what does that turn him into? Like a Marc Gasol without defense?
Exactly.
He's very corpsey, and he's the one on this list that makes me the most sad.
I know it, dude. I was always a big Boogie guy myself as well, and the decline there has been steep. Can we go like a minute on the Rockets uniform from last night?
If we can keep it to a minute, it'll be a miracle. But by all means,
exactly.
Go.
Yeah, so I texted you just in a rage last night. Not because anything really bad was happening in my life, but because the Rockets were playing in a powder blue uniform. And I hit you with a text that was something to the effect of, like, teams can't just make up colors. Like, why are they doing this?
Yes.
And especially a team with a rich uniform history, right? Like, the Rockets have a good, like, sort of backlist or catalog of uniforms that they could dip into if they wanted to do an alternate or if they wanted to do a throwback or whatever. But I turn this game on. It feels like I'm watching a Sacramento Kings game from like the late 1980s or whatever. I'm expecting to see the names like on the bottom of the jersey, and it's the Rockets. And I don't know, man. I just think this thing has gotten out of control. It's frustrating to me that we're changing color schemes. I don't like it.
Well, that's the thing, is like, they're not even trading or changing color schemes. They're just because like that would be like a rebranding, you know, when you're going to, like you mentioned in our text exchange, how Philly had an era of like those black and gold ones, like the Iverson era.
Yeah, they were horrible.
They were really ugly.
Oh, that was so ugly, dude.
That was a changing of color schemes. And Philly's more or less changed back to the red, white, and blue, which is so good because they're called the 76ers. I mean, it is.
Dude, they're the 76ers. It's the whole thing with the bell, the whole deal. Yeah, right.
So I think two things have influenced this, that it seems to me, you know, players started trading jerseys after games with their bros, you know, they go swap jerseys. It feels like teams just started doing the same thing. So they're like, hey, Sacramento's got a powder blue jersey. Let's just do that. And Sacramento's like, I don't know. Why don't we try green? And it defeats the whole purpose of uniforms. I don't know who I'm watching when I turn on games anymore. The Lakers were in a powder blue the other night.
Oh, it was awful. I think I texted you about that, too. It looked like a FUBU sweater from 2002. It was terrible.
And here's the thing. The Lakers have a history of powder blue when they were the Minneapolis Lakers.
Exactly.
Which is not the same franchise. So first of all, Lakers, you don't get to claim titles that George Mikan won. Second of all, powder blue is not your color scheme. You're purple and gold, and stay purple and gold. It's classic. It's legendary. It's Elgin.
Sure.
It's Kobe.
It
it's
amazing.
Magic. It's all of them.
Oh, looks great on TV. The whole deal. So it really frustrates me, Pipe, and it's really, not to overstate it, it's almost grotesque to me the sort of flippant attitude that teams have toward their color scheme. I'll give you another example. This is one we talked about, I think, via text as well. But like, so the Craig Elo era Mark Price era Cleveland Cavs, Larry Nance Sr. Beautiful uniform. It was orange and blue, really iconic, really good looking uniform. But then like around the LeBron era, they changed to like this ketchup and gold thing.
I think they call it wine.
Yeah, but it's awful. It looks really bad. I don't know that anybody like identifies with it or will get nostalgic for it when it's gone. And to me, that's sort of the barometer. So like uniforms that people thought were hideous at the time, but that have aged really well include like the purple Toronto Raptors uniform. Yeah, it was garish. It was over the top. It was really 90s, but like people are really nostalgic for that uniform. Yes. I think 'cause it was fun. You know, it kind of syncs up with Vince Carter and some things that you think about with Toronto. The Vancouver Grizzlies uniform has really aged well.
Yeah.
It's the iteration of the Grizzlies uniform that I'm the most excited to see when I turn the TV on. But
yeah, the era of teal and purple. So yeah. That early 90s. So you had Toronto, you had Charlotte, you had Vancouver. Mm-hmm. Those have all aged nostalgically well.
They really have, and they look good. Like they're good looking uniforms, as opposed to sort of the generic dreck that Toronto is in now. And I'm going to get to this in our next segment. But another team that's gone the like generic dreck route is the Clippers, and it kills me because they used to have a really fun uniform. So yeah, this is an ongoing kind of unfolding discussion for
so
us.
I have a question for you regarding why this has happened. So how much of this do you think is because, particularly in the NBA, more than any other sport, fans are fans of players, not teams?
Yeah.
So like people were Kobe fans. And if Kobe at some point had gotten traded to like the Phoenix Suns, they would have bought a Kobe Phoenix Suns jersey. People are LeBron fans, which just means the Lakers got a whole bunch of bandwagon jumpers. Like people are Steph Curry fans, not Golden State fans. So the uniform is almost just a like, it's like a fashion show for the players, as opposed to this is our, the team is not the identity anymore. The star player is, which means that if you root for a garbage team like my favorite team, like you're like, man, my star player is D'Angelo Russell and Carl Anthony Towns. It doesn't even matter what our uniform is. Nobody wants that.
I know, man. I know it. Yeah, you make a good point. And I think it's really true at the highest level, right? So if you're one of these people that loves Kobe or loves LeBron or whatever, then I think that's true. But for those of us in smaller markets, and I would put, you know, the Timberwolves in this category too, like you really do like the team. Like I like the Grizzlies. I like going to watch them play. I like, you know, kind of casually caring about who's on their roster, et cetera. And, you know, the Grizzlies are one of these markets where, you know, we kind of fell backwards into John Morant, and that was great. But like we don't have a lot of generational sort of, you know, global superstars coming through here in terms of guys that we have on our team. So you really do have to like the team. And if you're in the liking the team business, you really want it. You want to look at a watchable uniform. You know what I mean? And you
want to be able to identify with it. That's the thing.
That's
like,
right.
I think the smaller markets, let's set aside Cleveland and LeBron, because that was a weird thing because he was from there.
Sure.
So you take Charlotte, you take Minnesota, you take Memphis, some of the, you know, Sacramento, like people in the area do care about the team because it's ours.
I
still consider myself a Minnesota guy. And so like those teams are my teams, and I just root for whoever comes through there for better or worse. In the Timberwolves case, it's always worse except for Kevin Garnett. And, but that's not the case for like most fans who just sort of, they watch for pure entertainment. There's not sort of like the irrational loyalty. So they're like, man, this Steph Curry guy is fun. Or for kids who are coming up.
That's right.
And they just turn on TNT and they're like, who's the dude who bombs from 30 like nobody in history? I like that guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And so it completely changed kind of the pattern of fandom, which I don't think is a negative. It's just a very different way of associating with the sport.
Yeah, you're right. And the kids thing is a good point. And you know, even as a consumer, like just because I would never buy a particular jersey doesn't mean that I mean, if I'm a rich dad and I'm looking for a gift for my kid, I'm buying him like the ninth alternate, you know, Memphis Grizzlies jersey for Christmas or whatever, with irregardless of how it looks, you know. One more note on uniforms. The Sacramento Kings, interesting history. They had powder blues in the 70s and 80s. They made the switch to purple kind of when everybody was switching to purple and black in the 90s. I actually think it's aged well. They have one of the more watchable uniforms in the modern NBA to me. I like what they've done with it. Well, thoughts on the Kings uniform?
Their purple and black also has like it was the best time in that team's history. Chris Webber, Vlade Divac, Peja Stojakovic, Mike Bibby, Doug Christie, like take the Lakers to the brink teams. Like those were NBA champion level teams. Yeah. Who ran into the Kobe Shaq buzzsaw.
Totally.
And they also began to change. Like they were part of the changing basketball kind of along with the 7 seconds or less Suns, where big men were playing on the outside, you know, four or five shooters on the court. They were really fun teams. And so you associate that with the black and purple. Like black and purple is not usually a great color scheme, but because of sort of those positive, like, man, those are fun teams. It holds up well.
I think it does too. Hey, were you a Chris Webber guy? Where were we at on Chris Webber?
I hated Chris Webber. Chris Webber was a whiny baby who thought he was as good as Kevin Garnett, and he wasn't. So there was a rivalry there. So the best season in Timberwolves history was 2003-2004. That's when KG won the MVP.
Yeah.
And the Timberwolves beat Sacramento to go to the conference finals where they lost to the Lakers. But KG just ate Chris Webber alive in that series.
Yeah.
And that, like, I just always thought Webber was more skilled than just about any big man and just didn't have the, he didn't have that like nastiness to just own the league.
And KG had that in droves and he was so mentally strong. I mean, that was like chum in the water for him. You know?
Yeah, and like if Webber had that level of sort of tenacity, I mean, he, assuming health, he probably could have been one of the, I mean, he would have been right there with KG and Duncan in the best power forwards in the league conversation. Now, Duncan, over the course of his career, proved himself to be the best, but there was about 4 or 5 years where it was a real conversation, and they were, you know, Webber was multi-talented. He was one of the most creative passers, decent outside shooter. Mm-hmm. And he was just kind of
wanted no part of the ball at the end of an important game.
Though. Yeah, like if you gave him the attitude of Rasheed Wallace or something, like he would have been dominant.
He would have been a buzzsaw. Yeah. I mean, just dominant for sure. Well, Pipe, let's get back into our corpse roster here. Let's do a couple of forwards. I actually found a lot of forwards that worked as corpses. Michael Beasley, corpse. Wait,
he's still in the league?
Still in the league.
I thought he was like playing in China.
So many teams. He's on the tail end now. I looked at Basketball Reference yesterday. I thought he was in the league. Let me verify because we can do this.
Well, I mean, I believe you. I just this may confirm your corpse. You know, I thought he was like a buried corpse. You know, buried.
Yeah,
at sea.
No, he's still there. Let's have a look. Oh, he's not, dude. You're right, Pipe. He was with the Lakers last year, and he averaged 7 points, and that was it. So, man, I feel chastened. I did shoddy research yesterday, but I wanted to believe so much in Michael Beasley as a corpse. I do feel like he embodies the corpse ethos and what it means. But okay, let me replace him with.
Funny Michael Beasley memory for me. So in college, he played one season at Kansas State, put up like 25 and 12, and
he got
was
an ESPN
just,
the magazine cover feature. Yeah. I mean,
he was a lefty. He was dunking on people, and so that he came out in the Derrick Rose draft, and I was living in Chicago at the time. And last sports episode, we did bad football predictions, and I mea culpa my Josh Allen take. Well, I was certain he was going to be better than Derrick Rose.
Mm.
Just, I was like, it was still the era where bigs dominated the game more.
Totally.
And so I was like, he's a power forward, but he's got like the, this was just post like Carmelo Anthony coming into the league and putting up buckets, which is funny because Carmelo's also had kind of a controversial career about how good he really is.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was certain Beasley would be like Carmelo with rebounding. And boy, howdy, was I wrong. And apparently he hit the bong a lot harder than he hit the boards.
Well said, Pipe. Absolutely. I think a lot of people were wrong on that one. Let me give you a forward that I think does fit the bill, is definitely still in the league. He was a guy that like everybody was so excited about the athleticism and the upside. He would have like two poster worthy dunks a season and you would kind of come back around to this guy, but really he's forgettable. Jeff Green.
He's Corpse on my list. Yes. Jeff nice. Green is on my list.
Oh, I love it. I love it. That's good.
So here's the crazy thing about Jeff Green is, I mean, you saw him in Memphis for a few years. Like everywhere he's gone, people are like, man, he's got upside. I'm like, the dude is 33 years old or whatever. He doesn't have upside. He stopped having upside 8 years ago.
Exactly.
He now is a starting forward next to the big three in Brooklyn out of necessity because they traded away every other useful player. And it's just funny because I'm like, he's going to be the guy who disappears in a big game and they lose in the playoffs or something.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So
I love it.
I have this is more like a farewell to an old warrior corpse.
Sure.
So it's not Boogie sad. It's not Jeff Green never realized his potential.
Yeah.
It's Andre Iguodala.
That's a really good one, man. That's a really, really good one. Talk me through it. Make the corpse argument.
Okay, the first corpse argument is his jersey number. He has the jersey number of a corpse.
Yeah.
He wears number 28.
Yeah.
28 is not a basketball number.
Yeah, it's a great football number. It's a great running back number.
If you're running back or cornerback or safety, like you're wearing 28, you got some juice. In basketball, it's like you were the last one to make the cut on the team and that was the jersey they had left or something. Like I didn't even know they printed that.
Yeah, it's like in high school, you were in the bathroom or something when the equipment guy was handing out jerseys, and you came a little late, and you got stuck with it.
And Iguodala has had one of the most fascinating careers because you know he followed Iverson, and was the next AI in Philly, where they thought maybe he would be sort of this dominant player, and he had good years, you know, averaged close to 20 and good defense, good rebounding, good assists. But was never, was never like the dominant player. Then I think he went to Denver where he kind of played alongside some other good players on some of those weird teams with no stars.
Yeah.
Then he goes to Golden State and is like the key to their multifaceted lineups because he can defend multiple positions. Draymond can defend multiple positions. So Steph and Clay can just, you know, wreak havoc.
Right.
And that's where he kind of earned his most respect. Like before that, nobody knew what to make from him. He goes there and everybody thought it was a little crazy because he was a highly paid player and all of a sudden he's taken a back seat.
Yeah.
But it bears out because he wins multiple titles. Then he ends up in Miami. I think that was last year. I think they traded for him or something. And now it's just like that. It doesn't work. And he's going to be the guy he's going to be sort of Taj Gibson-y at this point where his skills decline, his athleticism declines, and he just sort of stops contributing but is still well-respected. So he just he needs to get like the Viking funeral where we put him in a ship.
Oh, absolutely.
And put him in there with his sword and push him slowly out into the sea with the thing burning and everybody, you know, sings a dirge. And that's where Iguodala's corpse status is, I think.
Man, that's a beautiful – it's a beautiful picture you just painted there. And I think very fitting – for Iguodala, great name, great corpse. I got another one.
All right,
and I'll be curious to know if this guy's on your roster. I think he checks the boxes of corpsehood, but it was still kind of weird and hard to put him on the list. Carmelo Anthony, corpse. Where are you at?
He's on my list, and I think you're right. But I think time will tell because he's hovering between corpse and Vince Carter. You know?
He could
corpse
become and, corpse and Vince
Derek,
Carter.
Like he can be Derek Rose-ish at this point, you know, where he is that just bucket getter the question is, can he be sort of the consummate teammate? Because that's where Carmelo has not thrived. Now, he's coming back to Portland this year after signing with them midway through a weird year and being valued, like, with, and there's no negativity out of him. That's a good sign. That's a good sign for his resurrection as a useful player, but I'm not sure yet.
And he's got a play style that could kind of age well. You know, it could sneakily age well. He could be around for a while. So he's maybe like a young corpse. He's in early corpsehood.
If he becomes an entirely reliable outside shooter, not so much the isolation guy, but just the straight outside shooter, he'll be able to play an extra couple years, you know, if he wants to do 12 to 15 minutes a game as the kind of reshape the offense guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it. I like it for him. Pipe, tough to find shooting guards for me on this corpse list.
Well, that's because shooting guard is like, if you can't be an old shooting guard unless you're really good.
Yeah. I've got one though.
Oh, really? Okay. Who you got?
I do have one. And it was sort of a, I think he settled into a role thing. It's JJ Redick. The struggle for me on this with him as a corpse is that I don't flip on a JJ Redick game and go, oh, there's a guy I'd forgotten about. Like, he's been around. He's got a podcast. Like, he's a factor in other ways. But he's old. He's declined a little bit. But I was just looking for shooting guards. Where are you at on JJ?
I don't think he's quite a corpse because JJ has always been a really good role player. And he's just like different shades of the same thing. So he's less of what he was, but he's not like useless. Because he'll be able to knock down a three until he's 70. So the question is, when can he stop getting around screens and that kind of thing? He's turned himself into, or at least for the middle of his career, a pretty decent defender, good passer. Like he was just part of good teams. So I don't think it quite fits. Because
I'm with you. I'm with you.
You know, if he's just like a different shade of the same thing. So if he was like a dark green, really good role player, now he's like a light green, really good role player. Just sort of faded a little bit, but still in the scheme. I'm trying to think if there are any other shooting guards. Up until this year, I would have picked Jamal Crawford.
Yeah, for sure.
But the league now realized he was a corpse and he's not playing anywhere.
I really wanted Kyle Korver to still be in the league so I could put him on this list.
See, Korver is basically Redick, but less multifaceted.
Yeah.
Where he just,
he's a one-trick Redick.
Yeah. And just got less and less useful, the less of other things he could, you know, you couldn't hide him anywhere else.
I'm going to ask you a weird question about Korver.
How handsome do I think he is or what?
What?
I said, what, how handsome do I think he is?
Dude, yes, that's it. Because I've honestly had this argument with, like, two other guys who I feel comfortable with having the argument about Korver's handsomeness. Do we think he's a good-looking guy or not? Kyle Korver. Yes or no?
No, he looks a little bit like a caricature of Ashton Kutcher to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So he's in that mold, but like drawn just a little bit skewed.
But if you dropped him into your high school 20 years ago, he'd be the best-looking guy in your high school. Probably, right?
Probably, yeah. And then when you get the like 6'7" and leading the team in scoring, all of a sudden that covers up a multitude of acne or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Okay. Interesting. I'm glad we had the Kyle Korver handsomeness talk for sure.
Yeah, it's a necessary one.
Anybody we've left off here, Pipe? I feel like you have some other guys on the roster maybe on your end that we haven't talked about.
I really only have one more. Obviously, there's Gallinari, who we mentioned.
Yeah, for sure.
There's the Udonis Haslam honorable mention, but I'm fairly certain he's sort of Weekend at Bernie's at this point. Like, he's been dead. He's just still getting paid. So
I love it.
Trevor Ariza was the other one for me.
Oh, that's a great one.
So here's the thing about Trevor Ariza. Is that every year he goes to a team and they're like, oh, this is great. He's a 3-and-D guy. He's going to contribute. Mm-hmm. He's going to strengthen that team. He hasn't been a good 3-and-D guy in like 4 years. He's a crappy shooter. He's not a good defender anymore. He's fine. But like when he came into the league, they thought he was going to be like a scoring wing. Then they realized 3 and D was a thing, and now he's neither 3 nor D, but he still gets like media love as like a veteran defender and 3-point shooter.
Yeah.
And he's not. And so he's fully corpse and a well compensated one at that.
That's a fantastic one, man. And it's extra bonus points for when your corpse is still getting paid an ungodly amount of money. I like it. So I like our combustible like clubhouse dynamic with Rondo and Dwight and Melo. I think that gets fun with this team. So who on this team, like current day, can still sell a jersey? Like who's going on the poster? You know what I mean? Who's going on the schedule poster for this all corpse team? I think if we call Gordon Hayward a corpse, I think he's on the poster.
Man, nobody wants a Gordon Hayward. Like nobody wants a Gordon Hayward jersey. I'd rather have an Ironhead Hayward jersey.
Oh, I would love to have that. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. That sounds kind of awesome.
Yeah.
I think it's Carmelo.
Yeah, it probably is.
And I could see Rondo simply because he was on some really – he's won multiple titles.
Yeah.
And so he has fan bases that probably still are endeared to him.
Yeah.
And then in terms of best player on this team, I think it's probably John Wall here and there. Now, he's iffy. He's on the brink. But I think Carmelo is our high ticket item.
So if we roll this team out as is, current day – so we got Gordon, if we're calling him a corpse, Melo, Rondo. I think you talked me out of D-Rose being a corpse, so we'll leave him off. Dwight Howard and John Wall, let's say, as a starting five. Can we win 30 games?
No.
How many games are we winning? Yeah.
In the 20s, I bet.
South,
you know, because if they played the Timberwolves every game, they'd win 66 games. But
sure.
There's no shooting on this team at all. Nobody can hit a three except Carmelo when he gets hot.
That's true.
There's no defense on this team, which is generally the nature of old people.
Yeah.
They're like the point guard game between Rondo and Wall is like you could have some really good games there.
Yeah.
Dwight can't do anything anymore. You know, like he's
truly a corpse.
He can be like a mediocre rim runner. Which means he'll get some dunks off of some, you know, some Rondo or John Wall passes, but rim running is tough when nobody needs to guard the arc. This is a really bad team, frankly.
It really isn't great, is it?
If Gallinari's healthy, then you get a little bit of shooting, and you can stretch it out a little bit.
We may have to call Redick a corpse just to get a little shooting, and
Who knows? Maybe Klay Thompson's a corpse at this point. He's, you know, he blew out his knee twice.
Yeah.
And so if Klay Thompson, you know, gravitates towards corpse, all of a sudden we've got our starting shooting guard who can hit some threes.
Absolutely. We're going to open up the checkbook for the corpse of Klay Thompson for sure.
Yeah. This team. So what this team is they're going to dominate the big three is what they're going to do.
That's true.
You know, that they are like, who was it? Was it Joe Johnson? Who just ate that league up? Because you know the big three, the 3-on-3 league that Ice Cube started and whatever.
Yeah.
I think Joe Johnson, former shooting guard who played until he was like 38, you know.
Dude, he was a great corpse. He would have been a great one if it was a couple years ago.
That's the kind of like Rondo's going to play in that till he's 50.
I love it.
That, you know, Iguodala, same thing if he wanted to. Now, Iguodala is also like a really kind of entrepreneurial smart dude, so he might go.
Yeah, right. He'll have better things.
You know, be a stockbroker or something.
For sure.
But yeah, there's some strong big three potential on this team. I could see Boogie going into that league once, you know, just he can't move enough for the NBA, but he can move enough for that league.
For sure. Well, dude, speaking of terrible teams, bad teams that are fun. I threw this question out to you in our pre-production meeting, favorite crappy team of all time, and then make the case for their crappiness and why they were your favorite. I've got one dialed up. I assume you've got one dialed up.
We may have the same one. There's an off chance because it's come up on the podcast before.
Yeah.
So I'm going to set aside all things Timberwolves because they have been crappy. But also the fact that they're crappy is bothersome to me, not like, oh, I can enjoy them in spite of that. So
yeah, for sure.
My favorite crappy team in my recollection, was the Darius Miles, Quentin Richardson Clippers team of the early aughts.
That's who I've got, dude. I put down the 2000-2001 Clippers, but really this could encompass about a 5-year window, give or take, on either side. And it astonished me when I started looking up the records how bad they were. Like, this was a bad team. So the 2000-2001 Clippers, they won 31 games, sixth place in the Pacific Division. They had Miles, they had Q, Keon Doolin, Corey Maggette, and Lamar Odom, all as young guys. It almost felt like a Fab Five kind of vibe with them. They were must-see television at the time for me. I think to be a fun, crappy team, you've got to have like an all-time NBA white guy, and they had one in Eric Piatkowski. He had the Polish name. Total white guy package there in Piatkowski. They had Michael Olowokandi, who was one of the worst number one overall picks in NBA history, but they...
Yes.
And he was bad, but for some reason, they still ran the offense through him. Like, it was like every time down the floor... You've got these astonishingly athletic, explosive guys, but you're just dumping the ball into Olowokandi every time. What else on this team pipe for you?
So I think the other things that make for really fun teams that are bad is kind of like multi-positional Swiss Army knife type guys. Like,
yeah,
if you're a bad team and you have a traditional point guard, shooting guard, small forward, power forward, center, like you're just bad.
Yeah,
but when you run out a bunch of like 6'8" springy guys who are you don't really know what their position are, and they're gonna dunk on somebody, they're gonna block some shots, and you don't really know what else is gonna happen. Like, the unpredictability is where it gets fun, and so like those guys they fit that bill. They had no good point guards. They had they had a bunch of like small forward, power forward, guys who would fit really well in the NBA today. Either, you know, Maggette would be a better player today, although he had a decent career. You look at his overall stats.
Yeah.
Quentin Richardson, who was just a gunner before gunners were things.
Right.
And then Odom, who, if his head had stayed on straight, really would have been he was a few years too early. Like, if he played in the NBA closer to today, he would be so valuable. But all of them were also young and stupid.
Yeah, he was unspeakably talented and, long, explosive. I got to cover this team a little bit when I was doing basketball stuff in the early 2000s, and they were so fun to watch in person because you saw all that twitch, all that athleticism. They enjoyed playing together. They were all friends from, like, AU ball or whatever. And, just a fun team to like and root for and watch on TV in that era. Had a great uniform. I really liked the red jersey script Clippers era. I thought it was really nice. The uniform went really south when they signed who is their big sign in kind of in the late 2000s? Blake Griffin.
Okay.
Like, the uniform took a dive when the Blake Griffin era started, and it's terrible now. It's not terrible. I take that back. It's not terrible. It's just boring.
That's the thing. When they rebranded, and it was mostly so everybody wanted to move away from the 90s in the early 2000s. Now everybody wants to move back to the 90s. But also because they wanted to move away from Donald Sterling. So anything associated with Donald Sterling, they're like, let's just rebrand all of this because he was a heinous human being.
Totally. Yeah. Generationally horrible owner. I get it. And I never put that together, really. I never put together the whole Donald Sterling aesthetic being a factor there in the uniform discussion. But I feel like to have a great uniform and to have a noticeable uniform, even, a team has to have one design feature that they always stay with. And for me, you can really make the argument of the script Clippers as being the thing that, regardless of the iteration, regardless of what you're doing with stripes and shades of colors or whatever, you stay with the script, and that sort of is the anchor that holds the whole thing. And I think they're lacking that right now, and it's disappointing. Now, I'll say this about the Clippers and uniforms. Their city uniform from like last year or 2 years ago, where it just said LA and kind of that mid-80s, LA Express USFL kind of font. That was hot to me. That was really pretty. Their city uniform this year is completely forgettable. I have
one more sort of aesthetic question for you before we before we sign this thing off. How do you feel? Have you seen the Brooklyn Nets court?
I think so. Yeah, describe it.
So it's like it's muted gray.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. The muted gray one. Yeah.
Yes. For sure. And when I, you know, so as I'm, so you know, they're a black and white uniform primarily, although they occasionally pull out the baby blues as well, which is strong because that's like the Derek Coleman, Kenny Anderson,
etc. So strong.
Like
that's one of my favorite things. Yeah.
A throwback jersey is different than an alternate jersey. Alternate jerseys suck. Throwback jerseys positive. Generally speaking.
Yeah.
But when they're wearing their white uniform, so they're white with just plain black text, which by the way, I kind of dig just the minimalist look.
Yeah.
They have this muted gray court that has, you know, the lane and inside the arc and then the rest of the court are kind of different colors, but all in this muted scale. And it seems like people hate it.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on it?
I would be in the hating it camp, but not as much as I've hated other things, if that makes sense. Like there are other things aesthetically in sports that I hate more. It reminds me of Eastern Michigan went with gray AstroTurf for inexplicable reason. I mean, they're in Ypsilanti, which is like the grayest city in America anyway.
I'm anti artificial colored turf because you're playing outside. And so like the lighting conditions are unpredictable. It doesn't always look right. And there's also 22 guys on a football field. So it just looks chaotic.
Yeah.
I kind of love it on the basketball court, especially when they are wearing, it depends on who they're playing, but like say if they're in their white uniforms, their white is like Return of Jesus Christ glowing level white. It's nice. it's Shekinah glory type of white.
I love it.
And then if they're playing somebody who has a bright colored jersey, so say they're playing Charlotte or like Toronto in their reds, it pops. Like the color really pops. And you know, the standard wood floors, you don't notice it as much. It probably depends on who they're playing, but I kind of dig it. And I love the fact that they didn't stay. As much as we like traditional, I think there are things you can do to spruce it up. And I think that one was worth trying.
No, that's solid. That's solid. It's defensible for sure. Dude, before we wrap the show, I want to lay one more aesthetic thing on you. This is in regards to the NFL. From a uniform standpoint and from a like color schemes on the screen at the same time, this is going to be one of the ugliest Super Bowls in the history of pro football.
Well, anything involving Tampa is ugly. Their uniforms, ever since they got rid of the creamsicle, are heinous. They're so ugly.
Yeah, the one that they pivoted to this year as kind of just an homage to like the Derrick Brooks Bucks is better. It was more defensible than the Drek that they were rolling out the past 5 or 6 years or whatever. But that with the ketchup and mustard Chiefs uniform, it's going to be gross, dude. It's just going to be an awful game to look at.
I like the Chiefs uniforms when they're like contrasted with the right thing. Like them versus the Bills when they were in their red and the Bills were in their white was like that was crisp. It looked great. Yeah, the contrast was nice.
Yep. Yep.
You know, if Chiefs Raiders is always just this beautiful contrast of uniforms. Yeah. But yeah, like the different shades of red playing against each other.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about Tampa. Like they don't look good against anybody because all their colors are muted.
Yeah.
It's like muted red and pewter. Like pewter is not a uniform color.
No. And the only redeemable thing about it is that Mike Allstott wore it. And he could wear a burlap sack and
how much better would he have been in like the creamsicle?
Well, we have that because his first year in the league, which I think was also Warren Sapp's first year, like they got in a season. They got in like one season in the creamsicle and they looked phenomenal. Just amazing. All-timer level of greatness. But Tampa, I don't know what they're doing with the uniform. Are you excited that Brady's back in the Super Bowl? Does that move the needle for you at all?
I wish it was with the Patriots.
I do too.
Because as long as there's going to be a historical run of dominance, I really like it when it's like it becomes the evil empire. I really the evil empire as a thing.
I do too.
Now, if he had stayed with the Patriots, I don't think they would have gone because they didn't have enough talent. But
yeah,
I'm just kind of bored by it at this point. I think it's an amazing personal accomplishment, but it's a little bit like LeBron making the finals now.
Yeah.
I'm like, you've done it with three different teams, or I don't know, what is he on his fourth? Three teams, I guess. Cleveland and then Miami and the Lakers. Uh-huh. And it just is like, okay, yeah, you really are. There's very little question that you are one of the top two or three players ever, in Brady's case, top two or three quarterbacks ever, maybe the best.
Totally.
But yeah, I don't care. And the media's collective, what did I say? I called it a Brady-gasm to you, so sorry, triggering listeners. I just, the fawning over him.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's fine. This makes me wish there wasn't a week off before the Super Bowl so it could go on a week shorter.
The trouble that I have with Brady right now is that he's such a rich guy. Like, he's a Bezos-level rich guy. And he's in the weird reptilian, like, getting work done phase of his life as a rich guy that it just, in retrospect, it never goes well. You know, we're going to look back on Brady and wish that he had just aged gracefully instead of turning into like reptilian embalmed fitness weirdo guy. And it's just tougher to root for, you know?
Yeah. At the same time, though, like the one thing I can't escape is that he still plays better than almost every other. Like, I think this year, four quarterbacks maybe played better than he did as a short. I mean, Mahomes was better, Rodgers was better, Josh Allen was better. That might be it.
Yeah, it's a short list.
Insane because he's 83 years old or whatever.
I really wanted Belichick to win the feud though. Like when Brady left, I wanted him to go 7-9 and Belichick to like go back to the Super Bowl, which wasn't happening with their roster. I get it, but I just didn't want Brady to win that, and I'm not sure why. I think I just like Belichick better.
Do you have a prediction for the Super Bowl? I feel like we're probably not going to do an episode leading up to it because neither of us care that much.
We don't, which is bizarre because I, you know, obviously how much I love football, but by this point in the year, I stopped caring. And the Super Bowl is always a little bit of an afterthought for me, but I think it might be the Chiefs in a romp, dude. I really do. Which will be a weird kind of is Brady getting the Viking funeral afterward thing, or is he going to come back? You know, that'll be some fun stories there, I guess, or some interesting stories. But yeah, I'm thinking like 38-14 kind of Chiefs game. Being said,
it's hard for me to imagine it. I could see the Chiefs convincingly, but it's hard for me to imagine Tampa only putting up 14 points because like they have a pretty good offense.
They do, and they're figuring it out now.
And, like, the Chiefs' defense is not great.
Yeah.
And so I think it may be more like, I don't know, 38-24 or something. And I think Tampa's defense is solid, although I think all their safeties are injured. Maybe they just were last game. And I would pick the Chiefs convincingly, but I think it'll be a lot of points put up.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. We'll have to do an ep after the Super Bowl on how likable or how potentially likable the Chiefs are as a dynasty.
Yeah.
We'll do the dynasty likability quotient of them.
Not to spoil it, but the short answer is as long as Andy Reid is there, real likable.
I know, man. I feel like they've got some real likability pieces there.
Yeah.
That are going to be fun to talk about. But Pipe, NBA corpses was fun to talk about. This
was
a good
indeed.
One. It kind of signaled, it kicked off my, deep dive back into the NBA and, this will be fun. We'll do this again, real soon. So Pipe, we have done what we always do on this program in that we've wandered to and fro throughout some topics about sports and uniforms. And until next time, Corey Maggette.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Is life feeling chaotic? I get it. I'm Rachel Wojo, host of the Untangling Life podcast. Don't miss the passionate encouragement and faith-based resources you need to help you clear your head and calm your heart. As Shell says, it feels like Rachel always knows what I need to hear. She keeps it real and is so humble. Her podcast is just the cherry on top. Enjoy Untangling Life with Rachel Wojo on lifeaudio.com or your favorite podcast app now.